All the Rage with John Bowd. On www.traxfm.org.
Right, hello listeners, welcome to All the Rage. Thank you once again for spending time with us. I am yet again very happy to say that I'm joined by a guest. Many of you listen to this show on the regular. We'll know Jeff from Clapton's Community Football Club, who we're big fans of here. Jeff, how are you this evening?
I'm not bad. How are you doing?
Pretty good, mate. Pretty good. Technical worries aside, because we won't lie to the listeners. This is the second time we've tried to start this interview. But fingers crossed the fucker holds up this time. Okay, so a couple of things we're going to talk about. Obviously, what's going on at your level with football, but before we do that, we're going to talk about the Super League. A little ruckus that took place in football a week or in our time a week or so ago. Give us your take on what went down there.
Well, I mean, you had the big clubs. I mean, the traditional big clubs, which the household names, I think people know. Basically wanted to start off a breakaway league from the body, which is UEFA, who run the UEFA Champions League, which is initially for the league winners. Now, obviously, when it's set up, they're going to assume, and the way they revamped it as well, where you're, it's the top four or top three teams in every one of the major leagues would qualify for it. In essence, it has the same sort of body as a Super League. To a degree, because you expect the same teams to qualify every year. They bring commercial revenue to it, and UEFA kind of obviously earn money. The clubs get to earn some prize money, and vice versa. So it's another sort of commercial sort of enterprise for the big teams, really, to kind of make some money. In the sense of how football is run, as I said, the big teams, they obviously set themselves up in a sort of a group and looked at other financial sort of ways where they could probably make more money, because, you know, money seems to never be enough these days in terms of to the big teams. So they tried to break away, got external funders to fund it. They were going to self-regulate it to a degree where they couldn't be relegated, and they would basically have a guaranteed sort of revenue source that kind of golfs the Champions League, which they're in now, way more. You know, we're talking about hundreds of millions per season, adding on top of their revenue of what they're getting already. That was the initial proposal. When it came out, the kind of the footballing world pretty much said no. Every sort of medium, top medium, Sky, TalkSport, BT, every BBC, every sort of medium kind of condemned it. And what was different this time, you'd probably say, is that the teams themselves, the players, the teams, managers also condemned it. Now, I feel it might have been slightly different if they didn't, and they probably would have carried on with the proposal, but because there was such a big uproar, there was potential, we're talking about fines, expulsions from domestic leagues. I think they just bowed down to basically public pressure, and one by one, they all started to kind of wilt and kind of said, okay, we're not going to join. And now, obviously, the chairmans, because again, we're talking about external owners who not necessarily have any sort of inkling towards the clubs. They're just there to see it as a business, and now under threat, they're thinking of maybe stepping down, because if you're here to kind of monopolize the club and try and make money and then sell it for more money, if you're seeing your revenues are being stopped or potential money revenues are being kind of stopped, then you're going to look to sell it on for now and then try and take on something else. Right now, as I said, they're all under pressure. You've seen kind of protests this week pretty much against all the kind of the owners. And it's either they ride the wave or they look for other investors and then pass it on, so they feel it's not my problem anymore and try and invest in something else.
I think that's a very good point, because what I got a sense of from a lot of the coverage I was looking at is part of this was, again, about a return on investment. The organisations or the people, very, very rich individuals who bought these clubs, didn't really like the fact that something like relegation meant that your investment wasn't quite as secure as it could be. So, yeah, never mind the game, never mind the effect on anyone. They basically wanted a scenario whereby it was a guaranteed stream of income, really.
Yes.
Guaranteed creator of cap. And, yeah, they were just basically using it like that. It's irrelevant to people as what's going on with the league, what's going on, this, that, and the other. They don't really care about that. They just thought what they want. They want their return to grow and be there for them all the time. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's quite evident in terms of to even take this on and not even consult kind of your employees. You know, I know you go to those the big corporations and, you know, the CEOs and bosses kind of make decisions and out of their hands and don't really consult the employees. But eventually you will get a revolt. If you don't involve your employees who are on the ground level, who make the business, the day-to-day, the business run, if you don't consult them and see what their feelings are, eventually there will be a mini revolt. And, you know, you will lose your investment or you will lose your business because it can't run without your employees at the bottom.
You are not the wealth creators. You're just the creamers at the top. What came first with this? Because we saw a lot of fan fight back, a lot of kickback from that direction.
Definitely the fans. And I think now, especially with social media and everyone's kind of got a platform and a voice, it's much easier for people to kind of vent their feelings towards anything, really. And as you're aware, kind of the way social media works, there's always going to be someone offended by something, somebody, somewhere. So I think it started with the fans. And obviously, when you've got the big platforms, kind of like your Gary Neville's and Jamie Carragher's, who are big pundits now, in terms of influencing people's kind of decisions on what they think, you know, when you've got them, as Gary Neville spoke so passionately about it, it's easier for people to run behind it. But I think when it escalated, I think it's definitely when you had the likes of Klopp and another manager speaking out about it, who were set to benefit from it. Because like I said, if the big team stayed in their bubble and said, we don't care about the rest of you, we're going to join this no matter what, it would be much easier for the owners to kind of try to ride the storm and just get on with it, because they know their fans are supporting it. So they will be the ones who will be watching the games, buying the subscriptions, if that's what if that's how the revenue was going to be sorted out, then it would have been okay. But when your own fans are against it, ultimately you need the consumer for this whole thing to work. The consumer has to come to these Super League games. They have to watch it. They have to buy the subscriptions. If there's a massive boycott, no one wins. Everyone loses their money. And ultimately, we've discussed it. That's what it's about. It's about money and extra capital.
I thought what was coming across from my viewing of it was very much a sense of, in some ways, this was the last straw, slow, painful commercialisation of the game from at least the 80s, which really went into hyperdrive in the 90s, as best I can tell. And that finally, this was the sort of thing where you really were going to make it. It's like you were taking the football away, finally. There wasn't really a proper league, as it were, anymore. Was there a sense of that?
Yeah, of course, 100%. And I think, again, it's no coincidence where you have quite a few American owners now. And I think if you look at kind of parallel in terms of, I think, NFL and other their major sports, how this is the sort of setup there is. I don't think there was much of a kind of a backlash, but I think definitely in the Premier, it's much level playing field. I think this is where the most noise came from. And you, to be fair, you had teams like PSG, but you would have thought would have been in there with this. I think if they said there was relegation, it might not have got the back with the in-group and no one else is going to join our sort of our club. It's always going to cause trouble.
We saw very much a physical appearance of fans when it comes to this. They were gathering outside of grounds. They were, you know, with banners. They were making themselves very well heard. I have a few issues in regards there. And again, I'm not saying comparisons as in I think they should have been treated badly by the police. But I am a little bit concerned that demonstrations and the like this time last year, all the way up to this time about a month or a half ago, were far more severely policed than the fans gathering for COVID reasons, etc. But nevertheless, I am impressed by what they did. So it's very much thought that in the course of about 48 hours, this Super League thing was basically killed because fans absolutely weren't having it, absolutely made sure everybody knew they weren't having it. There was lots of media coverage of it. They were either reaching out themselves via social media or they were making sure people saw them on TV, you know, chanting, fuck the Super League, among other things. impressive stuff. Do you think that? I think that absolutely was the fundamental thing that killed this off.
Yes, definitely. As I said, it was the public outcry, and I think very much so. with today and modern times, PR is everything, because PR is monetized. So once you haven't got the sponsors or the people supporting it, I think it's very easy. I mean, cancel culture, as you're well aware, it's rife. It's pretty much it's every day someone new or someone different is getting cancelled. And when you're getting cancelled, potentially, as I said, it can affect obviously your revenue and your income. So look, as I said, if the fans are not on it or the fans don't support it, there is no Super League, because there's no consumer. And that's the key component. So if your consumer are speaking up and telling you, we don't want this, you have to listen, because they just will turn off. And I think the clubs realised this. So they probably felt and knew, look, we better step away from this, because it's only going to get worse. And you had sanctions from like the Premier League saying we'll kick teams out, UEFA saying we'll kick teams out, even FIFA saying players that participate in this will be prevented to play in the World Cup. Now, as a football player, sometimes that's the dream, to represent your nation at a World Cup, become potentially a national hero or produce moments which, you know, are part of your legacy, will never be forgotten. So with all those sort of threats in place, I mean, it would have went further, obviously, in terms of the courts, whether you can do that. But as a player, are you going to risk it? So all these things kind of amalgamated and all kind of led up, and the teams realised, you know, we were probably a bit hasty. And then obviously then came the grovelling, the apologies, and, you know, we were wrong, we'll listen to you next time, that sort of stuff. And it was killed. I mean, Perez is still trying to keep the dream alive. But again, I think that's pretty much because Real Madrid, they always say it, they're in real sort of debt, but they've been saying it for quite a few years now, Real Madrid and Barcelona. They still seem to find 100 million for transfers every other window. So I don't know what that actually means when they say they're in debt. They're never really in fear of kind of going out of business. So I just think, again, it's just people just trying to line their pockets. And that's what it is, people trying to line their pockets, really.
Yeah, completely. And it always makes me laugh when I think of that, because I think in a way, perhaps everyday people can relate to this, is when it comes to notions of a team like this being, quote, in debt. It's like, you know that person who's always going on holiday and claiming they haven't got any money?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, down the pub, yeah.
Very true.
Yeah, we've all met that person. That's Real Madrid.
Yeah.
On the consumer front, I mean, what, you're not wrong, but I would say that I think people were getting a sense now if they wanted something more than football just being a consumer commodity, in which, as you say, kit prices keep going up, ticket prices keep going up, season tickets, etc. It's costing more and more. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And I think maybe that's what we've seen, perhaps people get a better sense of in the last, as I say, in the time we're talking, the last week and a half or so, when people realised, they're absolutely stripping the shit out of this asset. But this asset is my sports. It's my favourite thing. In some cases, it's my livelihood.
Yeah, exactly. You're right, 100%. And I think, like you said, I think the fans just said, look, this is the last straw. The timing of it, you know, we're not even really fully out of the pandemic and you're already putting this across. It just hit too many nerves at the wrong time. I mean, even if you look at Sky, during the pandemic, they were obviously showing games, all of the games. Then they introduced a pay-per-view to watch particular games, so not all the games were available. And again, another backlash came from it, charging people during the pandemic. No one was buying it, because I think people are now really, the illegal streams are quite really big. So people, no one was going to pay £15 for, no disrespect to that, maybe like a Burnley versus West Brom. You're not going to fork out that sort of money. So they realized, again, it was a bad step and they withdrew it. So it's quite interesting that these sort of scenarios that they build up on sort of like trying to monetize it in terms of financial gain. But once they realize actually it's not really working, we better step back before it becomes worse. And then, I don't know, people switch off and go to a rival company. Maybe they might take on the BT kind of box instead of a Sky one. So it's very interesting how these guys initially put that in terms of just taking the fans for granted, really, and then realize actually, you know, we're probably going too far here, so let's just step back.
Yeah, and it seems funny because, again, from a slight outsider's perspective, I've seen so much of people kind of biting their knuckle a little bit and going, okay, I'm now on UEFA's side. No, I'm not free.
Yeah, you're right, which is funny because the UEFA are not necessarily the good guys here. But I think I even said it on Twitter. I think the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And I think you had to choose one of the lesser evils, I think. So for now, I think it's you side with your UEFA. Then eventually you get the Super League out of the way. Then eventually you can now turn on your UEFA and say, well, now we've got the Super League. Now you need to revamp it, because UEFA have proposed to do something similar, not necessarily where it's kind of it's all tailored to the big boys staying in there, but they were looking to do something similar, extending the Champions League. So there's more prize money, more revenue. So again, their proposal now we looked at to see how fair it is towards everybody, and they may have to revamp it themselves.
Yeah, I would say from personal experience, though, folks, be careful with that my enemy's enemy thing, because sometimes one enemy gets a hell of a lot more powerful than you realise, because you were concentrating on the... I'm not saying it's wrong, I'm just saying keep tabs on it.
Yeah, of course.
If you listen to my old bones as I lecture you all about my experience, certainly speaking from a trade union perspective, I've been there with that kind of thing before. United Action is the thing that stands out for me here. Speaking as a trade unionist and an activist and any of those other things I've done as well, that is absolutely what I've seen here. It is totally
United
activism with one goal. And again, I'd say that to a lot of football fans out there. You might not categorise yourself as a political activist at any time before now, but I think you are one today, because you have taken a stand against the evils of unaccountable capital and unregulated capitalism, which is just launching itself in whatever direction it wants to and couldn't care less about the results. As many people on Twitter said, a bunch of incredibly rich people not giving a toss about what they're doing or the results. Fancy that. Yeah. Welcome to the real world, everybody.
Yeah.
There's a couple of questions I want to ask where now I'm a little bit, maybe not cynical, but maybe that's the right word. I'm just a little questioning now, and I hope people take this in seriously. I mean, as we mentioned a little while before, ticket prices, the slow commercialisation, the other parts of the Premier League. Why now? Why are fans so angry now? You didn't seem to get as angry when the ticket prices went up. They didn't seem to get as angry when it was taken off terrestrial TV and completely, dominated by Sky. It's a fair, without any sense of smarminess, I genuinely mean it's a genuine question. Why do you think this is?
Yeah.
Is this just like the last straw?
Yeah, I believe so. I think they got the timing totally wrong, the PR totally wrong. At a time where, we're talking about kind of people losing their jobs and the services being under strain, you're now going to come and say you're going to start a Super League, which is going to incur $310 million each. I just think it's been simmering. If we wanted to be, like I said to you before, in terms of the pay-per-view games and stuff, that's not taken off. The subscriptions, just the traditional kind of Sky and BT subscriptions, where obviously to get your Premier League and your Champions League, that's slightly gone up anyway. And I think a few people have kind of turned off regardless of that. Some people just refuse to kind of watch Champions League. They just wait for the highlights, or they just watch it on YouTube, or they just stream. These illegal streams are out there. So I think people are slowly turning off anyway. So I think now it's kind of like, this is one jab too many. And you've not taken anyone into account. It wasn't, and like I said, it's not like they consulted maybe the teams and thought, is this a good idea? It just seems the big team just thought, we can take the fans for granted. You will set this league, Super League up. There'll probably be a bit of defiance to it, but eventually we'll just continue as it goes, as we go on, as what tends to happen with a lot of these things. You get the initial kind of reaction, then it kind of fizzles out, and then something else comes on, and then they just carry on behind the scenes doing what they're doing. So I think people just said, no, you're not going to do it. Also, it would have affected kind of, it's the biggest change it would have been, because if the FA is saying that they'll kick these six teams out, then all of a sudden, we're talking about teams of tradition, years and decades and centuries of tradition, all of a sudden would change forever. No United, no Liverpool, teams that the Premiership often are built on commercially, with all their fan base and what they bring to it, all of a sudden not in the league. So part of it, is obviously, as we said, the fan hoo-ha, but I think, as with often with many cases, once people's pockets are affected, all of a sudden now it's a case of, okay, now we need to act and mobilise. And UEFA and the Premiership as a brand would have been affected. So that's the incentive, I guess. When we compare it, obviously, to which it's been quite vocal this week and last week in terms of there's not this much kind of refuffle in terms of racism, it's because it's not monetized. You know, it doesn't affect, you know, someone being racially abused. It doesn't affect them in the same sort of way. Well, teams drop it, taking that themselves out of the league and losing money. So that's why it's always, I think it's always going to be a different sort of reaction.
Yeah. Also, something that rang a few alarm bells for me, because I've seen this a few times, was the claim that we needed to do this Super League. There is no alternative. Because we have to save football. We have to save football in some way. Football's in trouble. I think I know the answer to this question, but I just like your take on this. How does football need saving?
Oh, well, again, it comes from a place of arrogance. I think these teams think, you know, football, it stops and it's the be-all and end-all with them, you know. Because they've got their fan bases, and so, I said, people who watch them, and generally the best players come to view them. So they feel, if they, I know, again, it is kind of a false narrative. They feel they're potentially going out of business and at a loss. Football won't be the same without them. So they need to be preserved and saved. So it just comes from a place of just general arrogance, I believe, and self-importance, that these teams feel they're the be-all end-all of football, and nothing else happens besides out of these 20 teams or whatever it is, nothing else matters outside of them.
I completely agree. It's very much that sense of you'll be nothing without me, and they're just like,
yeah,
girl, pack your bags and go. Trust me, the guy, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah, just remember that to my the millionaires out there. Football doesn't lead you.
It doesn't. It will continue and always continue, even from its grassroots. So,
well, the very first game of yours I saw was in Northwick Park, just around the corner from the hospital, and it was just a very, very basic setup of, it was a non-league game, I think, of in a park. You know, there was two or three football fields there. There was a game going on the other side. Interesting story, actually. The young lady there, who was the referee, came up after her game was over to chat with me and my partner while we were watching and asking about who was playing. So we were telling them, making all these really good calls, I must say. Oh, right, this girl's bright. And then not oh so long ago, I saw her on BBC London News. And she's
wow.
The first female referee that's in her league or whatever. I know that girl. anyway, yeah, so, yeah, exactly. So it was. I got a really strong sense of here we are, this well-established team, well-known in other parts of the world, of course, as we covered on the show before, because of your kit and some of the, you know, starts taken, and they're just playing in a local park. So you're absolutely right, football woman, and by the way, it was very exciting too. I enjoyed it as much as heathen like me can enjoy football.
Okay, I think we won as well. I think it might have been a cup game.
You did win.
Yes.
In fact, actually, every game I've been to so far, you've won. I don't want to say anything about that, but you know, just
okay,
taking false credit here, but you know, you're welcome.
That's it, we'll book you in for a few more, definitely.
Looking forward to it, mate. You're going to bring your family, actually.
Oh, that'll be good.
Okay, moving on from saving football. Now, just another general football issue before we talk about the team. So we were chatting a little bit just before we came on air. In fact, we were probably chatting before the first technological breakdown we've had this evening, but hopefully we're doing well so far. There's kind of some more talk about activities going on in, mm-hmm, in regards wider social concepts, in this particular case racism in football and the Black Lives Matter movement still being present, thankfully, in my opinion, and I think it's still there. Where do you make of this? So sorry about, I'm going to maybe mangle this a bit, but if I remember rightly, there's something's happening this week, in the week that we're talking, not the week we're broadcasting, the major teams are going to go off social media for 3 days or something, is it, have I got that right?
Yes, that's how I believe. I think this weekend, I think they're going to have a sort of a media blackout on all sort of platforms and just have no activity, really, in protest of what seems to be a constant. And I think, if I'll be honest with you, I think it's been happening a while. It's only really been brought to light quite recently. I'm sure these players were getting racially abused quite a lot, because with these sort of fake troll accounts, it's so easy to kind of send a few kind of monkey emojis or bananas and then set up another account once you're reported within hours. So I think it's always been going on. But again, with as you say, with Black Lives Matter, these things are now being brought more to the fore and more of a discussion topic. Something needs to be done. And like I said, initially to my point just before, often feel things don't happen or change doesn't happen until it's monetized, until people are losing a revenue source or someone's bag, as we like to call it, is being affected. Then these things won't change, because we've been saying the same things for a few months now. I mean, it's quite common. It's a sort of deja vu. So I don't know, a player of color will make a mistake in a game, and pretty much within hours he's been abused on social media. He will bring it to the attention. Sky will report it, say this is bad. Social media companies need to do more. And then within a few days there's another game, and it's kind of deja vu, Groundhog Day again, and the same thing happens, and it's cycle and repeat. So I feel with the social media blackout, again, it's an aim to kind of show, look, we don't really need you, you need us, that sort of scenario. So that's what they're trying to do. And they're going to try and encourage more, maybe platforms to do, or people with social status to do the same, until they kind of take it more serious, really. Because I think there are algorithms that they can use. I mean, we know that, let's just say there was a potential terror plot that was about to happen. We know within hours, these people can be found, IP address and everything, and they can be brought to justice. So if the algorithms are there, you can definitely use it for this type of sort of scenario in terms of racism. And it's only going to stop when people are made accountable of it, because the anonymity of it encourages people to do it. And I think it's all walks of life. I wouldn't even say it's just kind of young teenagers, just having a laugh and seeing if they can make the news. I think it's often mature adults as well who know, again, they could just set up a troll account, as a lot of people do, and just vent because they've lost the game. So they feel they have a right to kind of, shout racial abuse.
Yeah, that's something I've seen for years and years, ever since I was quite young. And it's always appalled me, which is there seems to be a bit of an attitude of acceptability of racial abuse in football in ways that you probably wouldn't dream of actually saying to anybody in the street. But coupled with the fact, it's obviously, okay, you've got your hardcore racists who will find anywhere where they can just express their shit. They'll do that. But also with the anonymity of social media, I feel like there is, and I've heard conversations where any failure by a black player has been fallen upon far more severely than any failure by a white player, which absolutely is one of the many epitomes of white privilege. It's this idea that you can just kind of take a shot at somebody who happens to be non-white on the basis that somehow their failure in this particular factor of the game is substantially worse than, say, if I did it. God knows where it comes from, other than the usual places that all racism comes from, really. I mean, I think that's the answer. But I'm a little wary of, I don't think you're wrong about the consumer front, but I think this clearly is going to take far, far more.
Oh yeah, definitely.
A monetary aspect.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. I mean, who's going to, if the police forces themselves, or even if, I'm not keen on any kind of private police force, especially, paid for by the rich, but let's be honest, these teams have got money. If they were willing to fund a division for a period of time within the police force to actually investigate these things and take genuine action. And again, there's a lot of details about the general ins and outs of what you can get in trouble for saying on social media and whatnot.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can get done. If I in Britain, suddenly made an accusation, for instance, against a public figure on a social media account, and that was picked up by anybody, I would have to answer for it. So I don't really see any reason why racial abuse, whether it's to a footballer or just anybody in the street, that is provable, with tweets, with Facebook posts, with whatever else. I don't see any reason why those people can't really be treated exactly the same way as equal before the law as the rest of us.
Yeah, I mean, the counter argument sometimes about how will they get people to register in terms of their details? You know, in some countries, you know, some people don't have ID, so they won't be able to have a Facebook account and those sort of counter arguments. But I feel there's more rebuttals really to in terms of the wider kind of context of this, because as I said, it's all about accountability, and especially in this generation, it's definitely all about accountability. I believe, like, even right now, in grounds, I think racism in terms of the like monkey chants and kind of racist abuse, I think it's less because now people know when they go into these grounds, you can't just hide in the crowd and say something. CCTV can actually pinpoint you, your face, and before you get home in the evening, your face will be all over social media, where you work, your family, where you live, and all of a sudden your livelihood has changed, all because obviously you've said something racist. So I think there's more accountability now in the grounds, like the Sterling recently was the Sterling one, I think, and they all got found, you know, we're talking about serious professionals in white collar jobs were all fired, you know, and I don't know what's happened obviously since then, but that's the sort of accountability we need. And I think that's the only way it's really going to stop.
I must say, yeah, they're very surprising that these are actually white-collar professionals and not a gaggle of lumpen proletariat. Tabloid press have been trying to convince us to hate for years.
Yeah, and like you say, it's I don't know, there is a theory, you know, in terms of obviously when you get into a crowd and you feel you can act as a particular way. You know, my psychology teacher is going to probably be knocking me on the head, but I know that, and that's what it is. I think there is a crowd theory that when people get into crowds, they feel they can get away with stuff. They obviously, as you said, they wouldn't dream of doing individually to someone in the street.
No, completely. I think you're absolutely right. And as you kind of narrow it down, as it were, to how face to face you are with someone, you know, it becomes less. You realise the acceptability of it. Also, you realise
exactly
your own position and how much of a threat it is to you if you kick on. Just to specify, by the way, if listeners just want to know if you care about my position, this, I'm not a big fan of expanding state apparatus, and as any regular listener knows, I really hate the police. But nevertheless, my point is that they, you know, these things already exist, like you say.
Yes.
CCTV in football grounds, generally speaking, I really hate CCTV. But nevertheless, it's there. And there is a question here about what our state forces choose to prosecute and what they choose not to. And all I'm saying is, while that apparatus exists, I think it's very telling that this is something that is kind of put.
It's on the back burner. Yes, sir. It's not on the agenda. And that's the truth. It's not high up on the agenda until it happens to somebody, or as we've seen recently, maybe if you want to parity in terms of like sort of the Wiley sort of situation, we all know that anti-Semitism has a higher pull, doesn't it, than kind of this sort of racism. It has a higher count, so it's there, like you said, it's there, the mechanisms are there, it's just not really that high on the agenda.
Yeah, and there is an issue for me in regards media, you know, representation or basically what the media is into at a given time. And unfortunately, I feel like they are able to set the agenda rather than report on it, because there is the example I always use is so when I was quite young in the early 90s, you couldn't get away from stories of Rottweilers or Pitbull Terriers mauling people. And then that seemed to go really quiet for a while, and then I don't remember another story till about Boxing Day 2006, I think it was. I can remember sort of saying to people at the time, so there's no single Pitbull Terrier attacked a single other person between sort of 1995 and 2006. It's very much, it was like an issue in which they chose to kind of focus on it for a while. And I think they've learnt a similar thing here, whether it's grades of racism, and you know, I think we've got good criteria on this show. We've stood up against all of them, and we always will, and face it down as much as possible. But yeah, we should avoid any of those kind of division tactics. They don't benefit anyone, that division. We're all in, you know, we need to strike back at all forms of racism,
yep,
and prejudice like that, and get it out of public life. And there's not a, you know, don't get me started, there was the free speech argument about this. Just quickly though, is we can kind of put a T on this particular point that we're coming to. As far as the representation of Black Lives Matter within football,
I mean,
let's not talk about grassroots so much. Let's talk about Premier League, you know, the stuff's on TV. What do you think of that? Or is it good enough? Does it need to be more? Is it kind of taking the knee? Has it had its day?
Much about, obviously, Zaha, he's refused to take the knee. Yeah, he refused to take the knee because, again, he just felt it was become a token gesture that people have done. And I think he's right. I think we've gone past the knee. I think in terms of any sort of protest, it's, you go through the stages, don't you? In terms of, obviously, you have a reaction, then you protest, and then you want some form of change. If it be some sort of legislation change or some real change that's going to kind of have a legacy for any sort of protest, because that's the whole reason you are protesting, for something, some sort of change or something to kind of be kind of less of a problem. So I feel we're past the bending of the knee. I think there's no point in it now, you know, unless we're going to really kind of put pressure like we're doing now in terms of on the social media platforms. There's no point, because the same person will be taking the knee, he'll cut after the game, get abuse, and he'll take a knee the following week and get abuse again. So what's he really taking the knee for? The knee was to bring kind of light to the situation, and we've done that now. So now it's about real change, I think. So, and my issue with sort of Black Lives Matter to a degree, the political side of it, and kind of it's that people want to kind of divide it to link it to obviously what's going on in America, and they're saying actually, you know, they're not really for Black Lives Matter, they're kind of anti-FA, and you know, they're just trying to kind of raise money, they want to destroy the black homes and that sort of stuff. And because there's such a disparity between the two, because it's a faceless organization, my personal opinion is, I think just to kind of alleviate that, I think we should just set up another slogan that's totally derived of it. So then that argument is kind of left dead in the water, because I think that's another way of it's become divisive. Because you had Millwall fans, for instance, but we know obviously the history of Millwall fans. But then you got someone saying, well, it's a political organization, it's anti-FA, that's why we're not taking the knee, or we're not keeping silent during the knee, and we're not, you know. So I think we've gone to that stage where it's now slightly become divisive. I think we should maybe find another slogan and continue to fight there, because I think you have people on two sides. You've got people that have donated and kind of want to support their political organization. You've got people that follow the slogan in terms of Black Lives Matter. And I think a lot of people fall into different camps. So I think the safer thing to do will be to take it on and find another slogan. And then maybe then obviously we can kind of unite again and then kind of see where it's going. Because some people, they're not supporting it because, as I said, they believe in the anti-FA sort of kind of theory, and they want to move it on.
Well, I disagree a little there. One of the reasons being, firstly, I think one slogan or another is not really the point. I think the connections and the work that has been done with the global Black Lives Matter movement is going to get far more, if it's done right, it's going to get far more traction than starting something new and starting something new. Secondly, for the kind of people you're talking about, well, you know, I'll be a little bit less than friendly about it. I think most of them are bullshit artists. They have a race problem. They don't like anything realistic like this being brought into their little game. And what they're really saying is they just don't want to support it, because I've heard all those excuses before.
Yeah.
Black Lives Matter is, they call it Marxist, as if that's actually a bad thing.
That's it, yeah.
I'm not supporting this because this and the other. It's like, no, I'm sorry, mate, that's just excuses. And again, you know, it's always worth remembering, these are the same excuses that were made back in the day when they were resisting the kind of changes, whether they came from, literally from someone like Martin Luther King, whether they came from gradual social change in this country. You know, I mean, I remember somebody, you know, yesterday's radical and threat to society is today's sort of cuddly old grandpa. And I remember that, for instance, before he passed away, someone like Darkness Hell, you know, was far more kind of benignly and more friendly. When I was, you know, go on, mate.
Yeah, no, I agree, because it was the Darkest Hell as well, the example.
Yeah, you know, he was no less radical all the way up until his death. But he was just kind of not seen the same. But I think that there was perhaps a sense that he'd been, you know, depowered in some ways. But also, I think the thing is, again, coming back to the media, if they're going to move away from covering Black Lives Matter issues in the same way, and not that they were ever any good at covering it anyway, I mean, it wasn't there. Somehow or another, they didn't seem to have a position on that. Now, what I see is basically a lot of, I don't think the whole movement should be moved on from on that, but I think it should be expanded. I completely agree.
Yeah, I agree with that, yeah.
And it was always of course it's a gesture, it always was a gesture. But sometimes, you know, I'll be honest, I've taken part in gestures in which I think, well, that's all this is. But I still think there's an element of this that matters. And when I
education, isn't it?
When I'm finished here and when I get home, I'll do more of the actual meaningful education legwork. But right now, I also think it's just, you know, people are hurting perhaps, and they want to see people, you know, stand with them with their fist in the air.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's not forget the gesture of, you know, Tommy Smith and John Carlos in the 68 Olympics.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, tremendous amount.
The fist.
Yeah, and throws out of ruptures throughout society merely by them doing this. But the wider issue was that the Olympic Committee weren't, you know, taking it seriously enough. The Olympic Committee also had, and I feel a bit wary about bringing this story up because I haven't got the names to hand, but there is known to be sort of people who were, you know, ex-Nazi propagandists, I think, were working within the Olympic Committee at that point, which is like, what the hell is this person?
Wow. And you remember, obviously, names different, but the white guy who overstood, remember how he was shunned after it as well?
Peter Norman.
That's it.
Funnily enough, on a different podcast that I do with a friend of mine, we spoke to a lady, a friend of his out in Australia, whose mother was an Olympic athlete, and she actually knew Peter Norman, and the lady we were speaking to also knew Peter Norman.
Wow.
He was quite young. So a lot of these athletes were around, you know, her family, because they knew them. And yeah, she said he was, you know, again, the media took serious chunks out of him, but he was very, very highly regarded in the sporting community. He was always
a
very loved man in that part of the world. Yeah, he took a hit because he gave them his gloves and said, use these, and I totally support what you're doing, you know. So good for him. Yeah, absolutely. It needs to move on from there. All forms of social progress need to do that. But you can't be paying attention to these tight-faced, basically just old-fashioned racists, etc. Want to reform. Well, you know, fuck those people. Quite frankly, just move on. We're not here for you. You know, we're here for the movement that needs to be what it needs to be to bring us equality. And if you follow that notion, and if you, I mean, yeah, Millwall fans brewing, oh, fuck you people, go ahead then, boo, what do I care? I'm not giving you any ground. And sure enough, you know, not long after that, they had, I think it was Keir Starmer was on talk radio, and some well-known far-right activists phoned in, started talking about wanting a white state, you know, using Israel as an example. Yeah, great example, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, where apartheid works, yeah, probably. Anyway, yeah, so do you want to come back on that before I go on?
No, I agree. I think we're, like you said, we're at a stage now where it needs to be action, legislation, things need to change. And I think Henri was actually probably the first big sort of name that said he's taking this off social media, and he's boycotting until things change. And I think as with all change, it starts with one person. And I think he's initiated all this. I think unless there is a change, I mean, if there was an alternative platform that was taking it serious, that people could probably move to with the same sort of volume, then I think things would happen much quicker. Because you can't tell me Zuckerberg doesn't have the access to the technology to make it work. We know it's there. We know with some forms of abuse, you can be taken off. So it's there. So it's up to really them. And I said, until their hands are forced with most sort of change, let's be honest, where privilege is involved, until their hands are forced, they're not going to do anything, because it's been spoke about for a good while now. Pretty much the whole of, if you talk about since George Floyd died, the Black Lives Matter has been going, you know, and the social media really hasn't changed. So,
you know, what this is about, and I think anyone who claims to not understand this is either being disingenuous or they're so dumb that they're barely able to be spoken to, is that you're talking about people fighting for equality. You know, the interactions of people with the police are vastly different depending on their colour and things like that. And I think that's, if anyone who doesn't want to address that and anyone thinks it isn't a problem, just don't bother talking to me because I have nothing to say.
I agree with that, because the thing is, when you get into debates with a lot of people with their counter arguments, where they'll bring stats in terms of like how many people have been stopped and you know, and vice versa, to say maybe it's an illusion or people have it in their heads. And often tell them there's a lot of things that happen which don't come under stats. And unless you're in the eyes of that person and see them on a regular basis, the prejudice and discrimination, you're not going to understand it. So when they dismiss, you know, when people kind of talk about the discrimination or their encounters with the police, you can't really engage with those sort of people because they can't fathom what it's like. Similar to what Harry recently said in his interview with Megan, he didn't realize, you know, what it was like until he sat through the eyes of Megan to see the sort of the disparity, the comments, the undertones that were there in the media. Then he suddenly got it, because obviously him living his privileged life wouldn't have never understood it.
Yeah, completely. And I agree. Sometimes people need that to bring it on home to them. It's just a pity that we actually have to do that. You just can't stand it at this basic level. But there you go. So I suppose to close us out for this edition, tell us what's going on with, more locally, the wonderful Clapton Community Football Club. Men's team, women's team. According to your website, things are looking like they're going to get back up and running. You're playing again, aren't you?
Yeah, so we, our league got curtailed, as most did at our level. So obviously the league was null and void. It's unfortunate. We only played pretty much 5 games all season. So it would have been like a 12-week window would have to have fit 20 games in. That's obviously providing the weather was okay. And it included midweek games, and not every team had the facilities or pitch hire, because some pitches even turned to cricket pitches during the season. So it would have been too much hassle to work out and to arrange. And so the league just curtailed it and just said, look, this is all we can do so far or at the moment. So we'll just welcome you back next season. But there is still a window where the FA were allowing teams at lower grassroots to continue. So we just arranged with the teams that wanted to return a mini league, which lasts over 5 weeks, started this week. Simple round robin format, and team that finishes top wins the league. The restrictions, I think, in terms of fans returning, is May 17th. So we have one game, which will be nice to kind of have to embrace the fans back with the fans in the stadium again. The women's team, similar sort of scenario in terms of their league. They've started a mini league. We've got development team that play over the marshes every Sunday. That's also continuing. We've got like the super fives. We've got the beginners classes. So five-a-side leagues. So there's a lot of things going on since the return of football. And Clapton, as we are a community club, that's what we're all about. Just getting everyone back together and playing, and, you know, similar ethos, and trying to enjoy football again.
Cool. And during the period of lockdown that we've had, if I remember rightly, last time you were on the show, you were telling us about how you were active in the local community, stuff that people needed, support through food banks and stuff like that. How's that going? Is that still happening? Are you going to carry on doing that?
Yes, that continued. And what we had was, which we received the Football Supporters Award for, was our COVID fund for members who may have been struggling, may have lost their jobs. And what we were doing little kind of sort of directives. There was that we're replaying old games that people were watching. Any chance we can, obviously, we'll put it at the bottom and plug it, and would help out. If you're obviously a paying member, if you had lost your job, we'll support you financially. So we always continue to do that. Food banks, always we work with kind of the Magpies project and anything local that we can help out with, you know, we would do. And obviously, and our main source obviously at the moment is obviously now we've got the Old Spotted Dog back, is trying to get it up and running and ready for next season, because that's going to be a big part of our club in terms of the hub of what we want to do. Because once we get that, we've got our own space. As you're well aware, it's very rare to kind of have your own space these days within any sort of kind of London community. So we can then hire it out to kind of local charities and people that want to do meetings on functions. And as I said, be a hub for the kind of local community and get everyone back in towards Forest Gate. So once that's, we're hoping to return probably around about October time, once we kind of sort out the ins and outs of making it safe, because it has been neglected for a good 5 to 10 years, really, the ground. So a lot of work to be done. I mean, myself and some other volunteers, you know, we were going down during obviously COVID when we were allowed in terms of restrictions, and helping out, just clearing things and just trying to move things along. Because obviously it's put us back in terms of obviously the timeline, but we're still working towards kind of an October time. And luckily, match day have been so good to kind of allow us to continue to start the season there. So there's no real rush, because we want to have sort of a grand opening and get everyone back to the dog, which initially was the reason why the hot club was set up in the first place.
Mm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to popping down there at some point. I have actually yet to come to the home ground, sorry to say.
Oh, Okay, yeah. So at Wadham Lodge, so we had the stray dog, but I was still at Wadham Lodge, Walthamstow.
So you got any particular games you're looking forward to? We can broadcast this. But I'm looking, the time we're doing this, I'm seeing on your website. Well, the women's team have got May the 7th and May the 16th games. Dulwich, Hamlet Reserves, and Brent Women, respectively. And
oh, yeah, that's always a big game. A lot of, I wouldn't say rival fans, but obviously there's a lot of good kind of healthy rivalry with the both sets of fans. So that's always a big game. But it's unfortunate, again, that's going to be behind closed doors. So we do have a live stream, and then that's when obviously people can donate to the hardship fund. So the game that we will be back, as I said, I think it's AEK, and that'll probably be in the stadium. So again, just keep our eye on social media for things closer to the time. Yeah, hopefully we can embrace everyone back for at least one big game before we go off for the summer and then back again. It won't be even too much of a break this year. Usually you get like a 2-month break between kind of seasons and pre-season, but it'll be a short break, but no one's complaining because everyone's missed football for so long. So everyone wants to get back as soon as they can.
Hopefully we can get things going. Obviously, time we're speaking, there's still a lot of terrible COVID pandemics going.
Yes.
Going on throughout the world. But Britain perhaps could be seeing itself coming out a bit. No thanks to an utterly incapable. But yeah, maybe that's one of the things we can get to. You know, now we've actually overturned the Super League. Maybe we can overturn the government.
Well,
players who don't give a shit about the rest of us in that group, believe me.
Put our money incentive. I forget if it's possible. To be fair,
that's true.
But it's a good example, like you said, of union action. You know, even if it's just because of the love of football that's brought everyone together, it has shown it can be done. So we don't have to stand for anything, really. You know, union action, it can always work. And people power will always overtrump the few that are at the top if people are collective and want kind of have a common enemy.
Hell yeah, I completely agree with that. So just in closing, got to check in on this one because I still haven't bought one myself, but I need to. The legendary away kit shirt, are they back in stock?
They are. I think all of our stocks have been moved to the old Spotted Dog, but we're still doing the merchandise. People are still buying the stickers, the badges, the tracksuit tops now, scarves, hats, masks, obviously. So it's all there. It's all there. So I think you do have to buy. I don't know if they do it online anymore. You need to double check because they may have put a halt to that, but I know people are still purchasing that because I can see when I do go to the dog, they're probably arranging all the parcels to be delivered.
Yeah, well, it's captaincfc.co.uk if you want to check that stuff out.
Quality.
Some very cool T-shirts too.
Yeah, they are. Some nice good slogans as well. So I hope it takes off, obviously, when we're back at the dog.
Indeed. Well, I look forward to that, mate. Is there anything else you want to add for this week?
Nothing really. I think thanks obviously for having me on. Like you said before, we're hoping, fingers crossed, we're now at the end of what's been kind of a torrent kind of 2 years, really. I mean, if you really think about it, you know, or should I say two seasons. So we're hoping that better days are ahead and hopefully we can come through this the other side, better people. Because that time people have probably had during COVID, it's the time you probably never would have had in this kind of rat race of a world. You know, you're always working to live and vice versa. This time, maybe you've picked up a new skill. So maybe if you just look at maybe the slight, if there is a positive to it, maybe you've had a chance to kind of pick something up or just kind of had a chance to stop. You know, the world has stopped and realized where you're going and just maybe picked up maybe some personality traits or whatever it is and just realized, you know, maybe I can do things better, I'll be a better person and come out better the other side.
Or alternatively, you've just trundled to work every single day like you normally do, being slowly ground down by this god-awful system. And deeply resentful of the fact that all these other people have had time off work. Now, I'm not speaking about anyone in particular. You understand?
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah, we'd like to think also the NHS and maybe people now respect teachers. I mean, homeschooling must have definitely turned a few people's kind of opinions into the work the teachers put in. Right. Usually it was kind of like, you get all these weeks off a year, why are you complaining? Now they kind of realise it's not that easy, is it?
completely. I think that at the best of times, it can be like herding cats, and via Zoom is not a good way to herd anything.
So oh, God.
I completely agree. People really have got a bit of a lesson in who is vital and important to our society and
yeah.
who isn't. Which is pretty much who we started talking about at the beginning of the show, really, isn't it?
That's a full circle.
Yeah, yeah. The likes of us are needed a hell of a lot more than any billionaire ever will be.
Yeah.
Nicely done. Okay, Jeff, thanks so much for being on All The Rage, mate. It's always a pleasure.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Anyone who's skilled and talented enough to get me to pay attention to something about football for an hour is someone who's very uniquely talented, and I appreciate your skills. And
thank you.
All The Rage with John Bowd. On www.tracksfm.org.